Blog Talk Radio. This is Pearl with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, we have some show today. Well, I think we do if this all comes up, this computer or whatever. Let's see. We're doing a whirlwind tour here in we're in Williamsburg, Virginia. We're at my timeshare place, Wyndham Timeshare Place. And that's where we're doing the show. And so far, we're changing computers. That's what we're doing. Because my fucking computer is doing a number on me. And what we're going to be talking about, let's see. I've already been to Busch Gardens. I've seen the bushes in their gardens. We did the Colonial Williamsburg, and we did that yesterday. And today it was Colonial Jamestown. Tomorrow it'll be Colonial
Yorktown.
I would do? I would actually play a piece of music in the meantime. But the whole point is, I can't even click on to that. So I'll just sort of gab here. Let's see if I can. Do you want to say anything? Why don't you talk? Can you talk? How about you? Nancy, can you chat a little bit? Can you call in? Can you do something while trying to do this?
Sure, I'm not enough. Not a problem, you know me.
Yeah.
Focus on your computer.
Okay, that's a great idea. Thank you so much, Nancy. In the meantime, let's see. What's where did we go? Where did we go, Nance?
Well, first of all, I need your...
Oh, it would help if you took my earpiece. I've been taking my earpiece and talking. I'll let you know when I get on to
it. Let Linda know. We'll get to her in a minute.
Linda, in case you happen to be on waiting for me, no, don't wait for Godot. It'll be in a few minutes. We have a little bit of a technical issue, but I am fixing it up now. So go ahead, Nancy. Just say things. You know, you can't have a chat with her, but just kind of you can't have a chat with her, Nancy. Just talk about anything you want.
Sure, not a problem. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome, Virginians, and anyone else who's listening. This is Nancy Kazicki. We also got Barb Coletta in the room and also Whirl with Merle. But we're having a fabulous time in Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and tomorrow.
Yorktown.
I'm the one who just helped Merle with the word, and I just couldn't remember it. But anyways, Merle flew in. She's from New York, of course, and she flew in Sunday morning. She started her day at Busch Gardens with Linda from the Tourism Bureau. And then Barb and I flew in from Sacramento, California later that evening. And the good news is, for those people who do not know, Frontier Airlines now has a direct flight from the West Coast. You stop in Denver, and then you fly on in to Newport News. And when I was actually reserving my airline ticket for Newport News, this was about 2 months ago, I'm like, who flies into Newport News? I've never heard of Newport News before in my life. But it was a great thing. We did land safely. And we got our rental car, and we drove up, which I believe was
64.
I-64, we drove up a little ways up to Williamsburg. And we're actually staying at the Wyndham Governor's place. And again, this is all from memory. But I have a lot of handouts right now in front of me. I hope I'm keeping you all amused. But we've had a very, very busy schedule. Yesterday, we went to Colonial Williamsburg. And the good thing about it is, you know, back in elementary school, that's what I learned about. I learned about all this great stuff. And yesterday, I actually had to use it because they talked about the Stamp Act. They talked about taxes with no representation. I hope I said that phrase right. Great things. We met Martha Washington, and I hope I get her name right. Hannah Corbett. Hold on a second. I have her somewhere in my fabulous.
Hey, Nan?
Yeah.
I think I got the computer's working. And Nance and Linda's there.
Great.
Oh, really? I don't know who this is then.
I told you, Mo.
Well, if anybody listening wants to talk, one and
right.
If there's anybody out there who's actually listening to Merle right now and myself, please press one so Merle will know that that's probably Linda calling in. But anyways, if I have the name right, yesterday we met Hannah
Corburn.
Corburn, I believe. And that was Robert Lee's sister. Now, before the word feminism even was in the dictionary, we actually met Hannah. So she was great. But anyways,
I'll give you back tomorrow.
I'll give you back tomorrow.
Hey, Eunice is trying to rig you.
Oh, God, this is hysterical. Oh, please, here we go. Doing it again. Linda, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, things are working now.
How are you doing?
Oh, fine. Now that we got this, all the technical issues. Okay, so first, introduce yourself to my
Hi.
Audience.
Sure. Well, it's good to be with everybody. I'm Linda Stanier, and I am with the Greater Williamsburg Chamber and Tourism Alliance. And we talk a lot about to the world about how wonderful America's historic triangle is, and that is Williamsburg, Yorktown, Jamestown. And this is a great place to visit. It's also a great place to live, but it's a great place to visit, and we've had a lot of fun having Merle with us. This is a great family destination, but it's also a great girlfriend getaway destination and a great weekend escape. It's really great if you can spend a week with us because there's so much to do. But if you only have a long weekend,
thanks,
hey, come on over. Merle can attest to the fact we can show you, you can have a lot of fun in just a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I wanted to start on is to chat about the Busch Gardens, especially the two you made me go to. I'm sorry.
I made you go? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hi, Linda?
Yes?
Linda, I'm so sorry. You know what? If it's not one technology issue, we have another. Merle's cell phone, for some reason, just went blank. But anyways, let me have you Mm-hmm. Use not my phone. Here you go.
We're going to try this one here. All right.
Okay.
Oh, now you need the code? All right, here we go. All right, anyway, there were two new things at Busch Gardens that I went to.
Oh, yes. It was great fun having
you.
Go ahead.
Well, what were the two things? Tell everybody.
Okay, well, Europe in the Air is a brand new, just opened, high-tech simulator ride that swoops you over and through some of Europe's most beloved landmarks. You take off from Ireland, you go over the Irish Sea, and you're in Stonehenge, and then through London. You almost feel like you're going to go under the London Bridge, but you go over it, and then you swoop over to Paris, and it's sort of like driving with a Parisian taxi cab ride, or you're running down the Champs-Élysées, and then across the Alps, you see Neuschwanstein, which is, everybody thinks of as the Cinderella Castle, and then into Rome, and over the Colosseum, and then you're back in Ireland again, and it's all done in less than 5 minutes. It's really spectacular, and you feel the rush of the wind. It's, and great visuals, and you really feel that motion like you're in slipstream, sort of Star Trek type. And then we went to see Celtic Fire, and
that was great.
That was when I learned that you used to do orchestrations and sing and play roles on, in rep theater. So I was really thrilled that you liked it because it's a great. It really is a great tribute to Irish culture. It's Irish song, Irish storytelling, great Irish dance, and a lot of fun. And, of course, we also had to visit in Busch Gardens the new Clydesdales and some sheep, and you got to play with an owl and see some gray wolves, too. So, I mean.
But I didn't play with the gray wolves.
No.
I didn't play with the wolves.
And you
I played
go
with
any
the
on the
owl. Plane. I petted a horse.
Yeah. And you wouldn't go on. I also couldn't lure you on any of the great roller coasters.
No.
I mean,
no.
Busch Gardens.
No, I don't do throw-up rides.
Famous for, but it's got. But you really did, I think, enjoy the great entertainment. And Europe in the Air is a great simulator ride. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. And Busch Gardens is. You need a day pass. You need a couple of days passed for that.
And coming up this summer, very shortly, will be a series of 20 concerts over the weekend, some really great names and performers. And also on June 28th, every night through the end of August, there is going to be a new park-wide celebration called Luminites with it really is a light display in each of the different country pavilions, Italy, Scotland, England, Ireland, France, and Germany and the Rhineland, but it all culminates in a pyrotechnic display every night. So, of course, we're also very famous. I mean, July 4th is coming up. What better place to celebrate July 4th than in the historic triangle where really America began, where the first resolution for independence was passed and sent up to the Continental Congress, and in Yorktown, the decisive victory of the Revolutionary War secured our independence. So July 4th is a pretty big deal around here. We have fireworks from one end to the other.
Yeah. Now, before we go into Williamsburg, the colonial Williamsburg,
mm-hmm.
I usually do my sponsor commercial closer to the beginning of the show, at the beginning of the show. But considering what has happened, you're gonna definitely appreciate this one. So we're going to just pause 1 second for a commercial.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yes, and you can get these wonderful brownies at www.brownies.com. Oh, God. Now you understand why I love chocolate so much, huh?
I figured had to be a reason.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. If you ever had these brownies, it's really sinful. These are absolutely, when I say the best brownies you ever tasted, they really are. But anyway, so now let's get into, we went to Colonial Williamsburg. But I'll tell you, I mean, you need a couple of days just to do, to walk around. Let's see if I've got this right. It's the largest living museum in the world.
The largest living history museum in the world, yes. It's actually more than 300 acres, more than 500 restored or reconstructed colonial buildings. And, of course, Williamsburg from 1699 through the Revolution was the capital of the colony of Virginia, and which was the richest colony in the English colonies. And so here is where you can really walk the streets where some of the most dramatic events leading up to the Revolution occurred, and you get to really talk to people dressed in costume who are really interpreting the people, and some are famous, like Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson, and some are not famous. Some are just, you know, everyday tradespeople, servants, even slaves. But you get a sense of what life was like on the eve of the Revolution and through the Revolution as well. And there are great programs that really, really interact with history and you kind of connect with it. You become part of the story. And I think that's what makes it exciting. History around here is not boring timelines and look but don't touch buildings and exhibits. It's you really connect with it, you interact with it, and it, you know, you spoke with several women who are quite quite accomplished in their own right, but were taking the roles of two very formidable women, George Washington's wife Martha, the first lady of the land, and also the wife of Light Horse Harry Lee, I think it was her granddaughter.
Well, why don't we just
granddaughter?
Why don't we just hear the interview that I had with them? That would be yes. Okay. Yeah.
So, I just stumbled into this house, and I'm not sure where am I. Who are you, anyway?
I'm Mrs. Washington. Some people know me as the Commander-in-Chief's wife, but some people know me as the President's wife. I have been both in the several capacities I've been asked to play. Some people even here in the city of Williamsburg remember me as the Widow Custis, or Daniel Custis's wife. And most know me, though, now as Mrs. Washington, or Lady Washington, a title I have been given.
And why are you here in Williamsburg, anyway?
Well, Williamsburg was the home of my mother. My mother was born and raised here in Williamsburg. Matter of fact, this is Mary Stitt's home. But right next door is the Orlando Jones home. That was where my mother was born and raised before my father met her and married her and moved her out to New Kent.
Oh, okay. So, I guess, like, where's the president?
Oh, he is at Mount Vernon. I've done this trip at her alone, for there are many properties here that are still owned by me as the Widow Custis. My first husband, Daniel Custis, had 8 properties here in Williamsburg. And now, due to the finances of Mr. Washington and myself, several of these properties now I have had to sell off.
Oh, really? Wow. I mean, you mean to tell me that president was married before our president?
No,
Washington.
I was married.
You were married before.
Yes, I am his first wife, but he is my second husband. I was married to a man here of Williamsburg, Daniel Custis.
Oh, I see. Now, so what do you think of this, of Williamsburg here? What is,
Williamsburg is not what it used to be.
No?
When I was a young girl, and my mother would bring him here so that I would be brought into polite society, Williamsburg was the capital city. It was a great booming town. I mean, there were balls, there were assemblies. There was, I remember when my children were little, bringing them to see the pig of learned knowledge, a pig that could cipher numbers at the courthouse when there used to be fairs, and grinning matches and jingling matches and all that go on with the great fair. It is no longer the capital city. The capital city now is Richmond. And since it has been moved, many of the businesses have moved with it. So there are very few businesses I even recognize here in town. It is not the town it used to be when it used to be the capital.
Wow. What businesses are here now?
Yeah, there are only few taverns left in town. There at one time were 16, 17 taverns. Now but only one that's left remaining. Even Mrs. Vogue has finally decided to leave the capital city, or what was the capital city here, Williamsburg. And there are few shops, but few and far between. For most people have taken their land out west, they were given to in the war, and have made this small burg smaller.
Was any places here, any taverns that you really liked?
When I used to come here with my husband, of course my husband loved Christiana Campbell's. It was her oysters that always caused him to go to his tavern. But I, of course, liked Mrs. Vogue as well, the King's Arms. We ate there with the children one night after a night of the theater. Of course, Mrs. Campbell's is quite elegant and quite charming. The only thing that bothered me about Mrs. Campbell's is she often told people how often we ate there.
Ah, and did it make people come over there particularly?
Oh, of course, when my husband was commander-in-chief, and then later on when he was the president. Of course, she was not still in business when he was the president. But when he was in the commander-in-chief, of course, anyone that drops the name that Mr. Washington dined or slept here often got a lot of business.
How did
and
you
our home lately has become more of a tavern than it has
been
a home, which is a complaint of my husband's quite a bit.
Well, how do you feel about the fact that you the first lady?
The first lady was not often used, but Lady Washington.
Uh-huh.
But yes, I was the first, and was not a role I had wanted to play at first, but a role that it grew on me, as it did the president. My husband said when he went to the presidency, it was like a man walking to the gallows. But he accepted the role for 2 terms, as well as I.
Wow, that's great. What is there anything that you particularly enjoyed doing because you had that role?
I enjoyed the dinner parties that I put together, many times putting my husband's enemies and his friends at the same table. And I find men always deport themselves better when their ladies are present.
Uh-huh.
So those men that would argue with my husband upon the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate or even in his own cabinet, I find them much more willing to listen to what he has to say if their ladies are sitting next to them and they have to deport themselves accordingly.
Uh-huh. What was like the most popular drink with all the taverns? What did people really drink?
Well, the rum punches, I guess, were the most popular, as well as the Madeiras when, you know, we could get them. But when we went to non-importation, sometimes the Madeiras were very hard to get here in the colonies.
Uh-huh. What is Madeira?
Madeira is a wine.
Oh, okay. I thought it was something other than a wine. Okay. So it wasn't like everybody was drinking beer. Wasn't that...
of course, the beers are quite... But those of my class, the gentry, preferred the rum punches and the Madeira.
Oh, okay.
Better.
Were there breweries here?
My husband even had the distillery upon Mount Vernon. We've decided to become mostly self-sufficient. It started off with non-importation agreements. We had to move to the wheat and the corn and the hemp and try to get away from the tobacco and the non-exportation. Of course, we could not export tobacco, but we could export the wheat and the corn and the hemp to the other colonies. And then my husband looked into fishery upon, and as well as many fruit trees that he put, and orchards he put at Mount Vernon. And then lately the distillery that has made our own spiritus liquors there.
Wow. Well, I see this somebody, is it a friend of yours that's here? Somebody you know?
He's a friend of our family's. It is Hannah Lee Corbin. She is Richard Henry Lee's sister, and a fine young lady in her own right.
Oh, really?
Well, thank you for that, Mrs. Washington. We were neighbors for a time, although somewhat distant. My home was along the Potomac River as well. Some distance away, as I said, but when one can travel by water.
Oh, by water? Oh, did they?
Well, the houses both being on the river.
Oh, I
see. Simple enough.
Yeah.
And for her, I never liked traveling upon water.
Oh. And why are you here in Williamsburg? Do you live here?
No, I don't. I live in Westmoreland County.
Uh-huh.
But I have a brother who has the use of a house here in the city through his father-in-law. So it's I have visited on a few occasions. Once to come and my brothers were of the opinion that the college, well, let us just say that the boys at the college were spending too much time engaged in frivolity and not enough time engaged in their studies. This was a couple of years ago. I came to Williamsburg because I wished to make an opinion myself. My son at the time was old enough for the grammar school, and quite honestly, with the troubles we've been having, I wasn't certain what to do with him. At the moment, I'm still not entirely certain to do with him, but what do you do with a 14-year-old boy? Nonetheless, I determined that perhaps my brothers were right. Now, had things not deteriorated as they had, I might have considered sending him to England, as most of my brothers were educated there, but given circumstance, I decided against that. So Elisha still has a tutor and is doing well.
And what do you think of Williamsburg?
It is hard to say because it is different from what I am accustomed to. I certainly have not so many neighbors. I live more in the countryside. I have visited, I have a sister who lives in Philadelphia, and in comparison to Philadelphia, it is, well, rather a sleepy little town.
I see.
But I do not visit here so very often. I find it pleasant enough, and certainly one can get whatever one wants in the city. That's the advantage of being in the city, isn't it?
Yes, I guess so, yeah. And do you frequent the places around here, too? Whatever, you know, is left, I guess, of the taverns and the,
well,
of any, or are you not a tavern person?
Well, I don't need to frequent such places, as I expect Mrs. Washington doesn't need to either.
Well,
I'm
mean,
not generally in the city for very long.
Oh,
and having the home of my brother just here in the city.
So you're really here for a visit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Are,
I enjoy your visit, though.
It's well enough. One never feels truly comfortable until one is back at home in your own bed. No matter how pleasant the company, no matter how comfortable the house, until one is home attending to one's own things, on one's own property, in one's own bed, you're never truly comfortable.
Wow. Okay. Is there anything else, you know, since I just came in, I haven't even mentioned, is there anything else, you know, like that you could tell me about yourself?
I don't wish to offend, madam, because some of my ideas are considered rather extraordinary.
Well, you are late.
Well, perhaps extraordinary is not the correct word.
Oh, okay.
I cannot say for certainly. I have not met every lady in the world, to say less than here. But I know my opinions are not necessarily popular ones, shall we say. I'm a widow, and in fact I have been twice widowed, and I have a fair amount of property. And I've managed those properties very well. Some might even say even better than my husband's ever did. But nonetheless, it occurred to me, oh, a few months ago, that being a woman of property, as certainly you were upon the death of your first husband, God rest his soul, there is much that I have to manage, and I must pay taxes upon that property. And it occurred to me that one of the complaints that we have had with England has been the lack of representation. What is it everyone says? No taxation without representation. And so I wrote a letter to my brother, R.H., Richard Henry Lee, and I put it to him. I suggested to him that perhaps now that we are undertaking the development of a new country, that perhaps it's time to make some changes. And it appears to me that women of my station are entirely unrepresented. Widows, femme souls. A married woman has her husband's representation. An unmarried woman, be she a widow or not married, does not have any representation. So I wrote a letter to my brother on this very point, and I have just recently got his response. And I will tell you, it sounds very much like our age, not that I should be surprised about that. But he said he would support me, but that he wishes to discuss the matter with me more fully. You see, the difficult part is, and he was rather vague in his letter, the difficulty of all of this is, as I said, it is not necessarily a popular opinion. And I am not suggesting that the franchise be extended to every woman. That would not be fair. As I said, a married woman has her husband's representation in government. An unmarried woman has none. And R.H. said in his letter, he said that that he is representing me as well, that I am his security and representation. The problem with taxation we had, of course, was that the people who were making the taxes in England were not paying the taxes here. Whereas if laws and taxes are decided here in Virginia, those who are making those laws and creating those taxes must pay those taxes. And so taxes will only be so much. And so that he is a member of our government, but also a member of our community and must pay those taxes, it is security and representation for me. But I wish to put to him, and I've not had opportunity to discuss it with him yet, that he also has a choice in his representation, and I have none.
Maybe in the future you think women will be able to vote?
I cannot prognosticate, madam.
Yeah, well,
I do not know. I can't say what happens tomorrow.
Yes.
I mean, if one could see the future, I expect that many would take different preparations beforehand.
Yeah.
And as I said, I have spoken to a few ladies, and my opinion, and a few gentlemen, and my opinion is not a popular one.
Mm-hmm.
But I am ever known for having my opinions. I am a Lee, after all.
Well, I thank you very much. I'm taking a walk these days, out here in Williamsburg, and I just popped into this house, wasn't sure who was actually living here. I just kind of peeked in. I thought it would be quite interesting, and I'm glad I did. So thank you very much. Wow.
You're quite welcome.
I certainly learned a lot. Maybe we will be able to vote. Maybe.
I see you are in agreement with me, madam. I expect that you are amongst the few.
We'll have to make sure everyone is educated to the vote before.
Yes, that is true enough.
Okay.
And of course, certainly not every man has the franchise either.
Fine, thank you.
Wow, that was good, huh?
Yes, they were both very formidable ladies, and of course they were talking about the time period after the capital had moved. But they were also in Williamsburg during the time it was the capital, and also during the Revolution, where it was a very busy place. And that's what people can see today when they come to Colonial Williamsburg, what it was like from the period of the 1760s through 1781. And those times, the times here of the Revolution and working up to the Revolution really changed the world. So, and I mean the whole world, not just our world. So it was a pretty exciting time, and you really get to be part of that.
Well, it was, of course you'd get to, you could be talking to these characters, but there's also the people who play the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And actually I did an interview with these two women, in terms of themselves, as to what they do and how this kind of comes about, and I'd like to play that that interview, and then we're gonna. After that, I want to get into as far as going to the place where we costumed me up.
Yes.
Well, and yeah, although I didn't go out and do anything, just and we'll get to that interview. Okay. And so here is the real Martha and Hannah.
Mrs. Washington, oh, we know you're not Mrs. Washington. Well, yeah, we know you ain't Martha. Who are you?
I'm Leanne Rose. Martha is one of the three women I'm going to play this summer. I'm playing also Jane Vogue, who is a tavern keeper here in town, owns the King's Arms Tavern. One of the few tavern keepers that actually stays after the capital city moves to Richmond. And then I also play Mrs. Scott, the keeper of the household for Lord and Lady Dunmore. So I play the absolute British to the absolute American as Mrs.
Wow.
Washington.
That's really
and no longer the Irish convict servant, so I kind of have moved up in the world.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been working here for 13 years now. I started off as a summer hire for the palace doing tours, and then I learned all of the buildings, and the first character I played was an Irish convict servant. Basically, I had come from Ireland, I had spent some time in Ireland, so for a long time I don't even think they knew my name, they just said go find the Irish girl. We knew very little about the Irish convict servant I played. We knew her name, we knew it was an alias, we knew she was sent over on the ship Hercules, and that was about it. And that was kind of an interesting character because that's what we call a composite character. We don't know a lot about them. It's like a lot of our slave characters here, but we do know of their people in the 18th century. So I learned about convict indentured servants. I already knew a lot about Ireland because I had lived in Ireland, and I went back to the committee and said, listen, can I make her Catholic so I can bring up the whole Protestant-Catholic problem as well as the problem with Catholics and Papists here in Virginia. So we decided on that, and that was the first character I played. I did a courtship program here, and then I kind of moved on and moved up.
And in being here, have you learned a great, great deal of, like, what Williamsburg was like? I mean, have you gained...
I've gained a lot of knowledge. It started off with, and that's what I liked, is when I first worked here, I learned the buildings. And in learning the buildings, I learned the town. And I was old school. We got trained for a month before they even put us out on the streets. And then each building I learned about, I was in a week or 2 weeks of training for that building. So it really gave me a real good depth of Williamsburg to be a foundation for putting these characters that I've had to play on top of. And then through Martha Washington, it's broadened my view to not only know about Williamsburg, but to know about Philadelphia, all the winter camps she went to when she was the commander-in-chief's wife, as well as a lot of women I feel have been lost to history, like Mercy Otis Warren, Abigail Adams, Esther Reed, who put ladies' associations together during the Revolution, which I don't think anyone knows about Esther Reed's, or very few women have read The Sentiments of an American Woman, the ladies' association that actually put women to service during this time of the war and actually told women what they were to do while their husbands are out at war, and also put treasurers together in each of the counties to raise money for the war effort that they gave to Martha to take to the winter camps.
Wow. Is there any character like that you would like to play?
I would like to play Mercy Otis Warren someday. With playing Martha, I get to bring a lot of these women to life for people. But Mercy Otis Warren, I had the pleasure of reading her letters this winter, and some of the letters that she's writing to her sons, and she actually, in 76, as early as 76, writes to John Adams of how to put the government together. And I would love to read that letter and ask what man you think this comes from, and then say, no, it didn't come from a man, it came from a woman.
Cool. Well, thank you. Well, I may get back to you, but in the meantime, let's talk to...
Well, my character, of course, is Hannah Corbin,
okay.
But my name is Sharon Hollins.
Okay, and how did you get into this?
Well, I've been here 12 years now. I come from... I worked for a while at a house in Newport, Rhode Island, where we did a similar sort of thing. So once I got out of there, I was looking for more consistent work, and I came here.
We were like at one of the manors?
One of the manors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the mansions, yeah, right, okay.
Summer houses.
Yeah,
they call
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. No, I call those places where you walk in and they make you pay money so they can make you understand that you don't have money. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's like, and we're going to really, really push that fact. You know, that you're poor compared to these people here, and give me money so I can
tell you that.
Yes,
you
but
know.
Sadly, without that money, those places wouldn't
I
be able
know.
To survive.
Yeah, I know, but still. Anyway, so get so the character you're playing again is the character you're playing now is
Hannah Corbin.
Okay, and have you played any other characters, or is this the only one that you play in town? Or
right now, in the course of Revolutionary City, I am portraying, I think it's six characters. I'm pretty much a different person every day.
Wow.
But much like Leanne in the past, I've played other characters as well. But given that the program, the necessities of the program, we have to switch up sometimes, and we have different programs that require different characters, and much like Leanne is Martha Washington and Jane Bogue the tavern keeper, you know, Martha Washington's needed for one program and Jane Bogue's needed for another. So we have to have that flexibility because there's only so many staff.
So, and I guess you must have learned a lot in terms of history by doing all this.
More than I expected, certainly. The problem, though, and I know Lee felt this too, the problem is nobody writes a whole lot about women. That there just aren't as many primary source documents about women.
Wow. So, know about the Women's Hall of Fame?
Well, it's a lot of the documents by women just don't survive. You know,
no,
nobody.
Do you know that?
I've heard of it. I don't know.
Okay, I'll talk to you right afterwards about this. It'll be very interesting.
But it's much like the slaves. It's harder to find information about the slaves,
mm-hmm.
but it's easier to find information about people like Washington, Richard Henry Lee, you know, Patrick Henry, than it is to find information about Hannah Corbin, Richard Henry Lee's sister, or
right.
Martha Washington, George Washington's wife, or whomever.
Because that's sort of changing since I started here and in the last couple years. I mean, I found a book called Weathering the Storm, which is all these diary accounts
mm-hmm.
of women during the Revolution. They just came out with a book on Southern women and their writing, which has a lot of Hannah Corbin in it. I'm reading a book that just came out and we just got into our library on women and their influence on the philosophy of the United of America. Early women, as early as 1726, one woman in New England is writing about the suffragette movement. And that has Mercy Otis Warren in it. They just brought out this year the letters of Mercy Otis Warren to her sons, to John Adams, to a lot of people she's giving instruction to on how to put the government together. Cookie Roberts' books, Founding Mothers, and then she just wrote another one. And I can't remember what her other one is. So excuse me.
Okay.
But a lot of stories now are coming out from the woman's perspective. And here in Colonial Williamsburg, we've got an electronic field trip coming out next year called Women of the Revolution. It'll be performed in schools in March during Women's History Month. And it's a project that I've been working on with Abby Schumann and Frances Burroughs several other of the women that have done In Defense of Our Liberty that played camp followers. And we're hoping to get, there's a woman named Holly, she's written a book on camp followers, and we're hoping to get her to come down here and be on camera with us when we perform this for the schools. But we're taking the story of Deborah Sampson, who dressed herself up as a man and went off to war. Emily Geiger, who was a young woman who rode communications between Greene and one of the forts. Martha Washington, Esther Reed and the Ladies Association. Women on the other side of the camp. Frederica de Rysdale, who has a beautiful diary. She is a Hessian soldier or Hessian general's wife that comes over with her young children. He is captured at the Battle of Saratoga, and instead of being offered a home by Philip Schuyler that she could stay with her young children, she goes to the different prison camps her husband is sent to. There's also Mary Perth, who is a slave, actually gets her freedom. She runs to the British, and she is put on a ship at the end of the war to Nova Scotia, where they send a lot of the freed slaves. And when she's on that ship, she's actually on the ship with one of George Washington's slaves that actually also does run away.
Wow. It's getting a little bit easier, but people haven't been writing about the women for as long as they've been writing about the men.
Oh, of course.
So there's more to find about the men.
I'm curious, do either of you know that the women are playing tackle football? Do either of you know that?
I
don't follow
football.
I used
to play tackle football when I was in high school. We had only three or four schools had a woman's football team. I was quarterback until I was sacked by a woman that wrestled, and then I kind of...
When was this and where was this?
In New Jersey in the 80s.
Oh, in New Jersey? Yeah, wow. Okay.
I heard that back there.
No, by the way, she owns a women's football team, and she used to play.
Where were you when I was younger? I wanted so badly. When I was born in Canton, Ohio, right across from the Football Hall of Fame. And I always said, I'm going to be in the Football Hall of Fame.
Well,
my mother was kind of like, well, Leanne, you know. But that was the only sport I played well was football.
I
could tackle as well as the men.
I did get, by the way, I did have a football song by the New York Sharks and made the Football Hall of Fame display for the first item from a women's tackle football team. But and I just want to let you know, if you think that was like, oh, I wish, at the end of this month there's going to be the first international women's tackle football tournament being held in Sweden. And this league, the IWFL, there's 44 teams on this league. We're just ending the season now. As a matter of fact, is it next week? Or did it? No. The regular season ended, right? The regular season ended, now the playoffs are coming up. So it's, you know, that's why I was wondering, like, when you say that, it's like a lot of people don't realize of the progress that is actually happening. There's some progress.
I couldn't tell you half a dozen teams in the NFL. I'm the wrong person to ask about that.
Okay. Well, this is really good. And by the way, because you're, you know, playing like six characters, how many costumes? I mean, you have to have a lot of stuff.
Well, we are all given an allotment, and the allotment...
Do you have an allotment now for each character you're playing?
No, I have an overall allotment. Given the Revolutionary City, they look at the characters that we have and the stations of the characters that we have, and we are allotted clothing...
45, was it? Is that what they said?
I doubt that highly. I mean, maybe individual pieces when you consider things
like... Oh, yes, individual pieces,
yeah, I mean,
right.
When you consider things like shifts and shoes
right.
and things like that, but as far as clothing that people are going to see, you know, you were given a certain number of changes of clothing.
I was over there today.
And
looks like one of my Martha gowns will not be a Martha gown now. It'll be for Mrs. Scott, the housekeeper. And then the
other
things that I'll just keep that gown for the days I play Mrs. Scott. Mm-hmm. I have three outfits for Jane Bove, and then I have several outfits for Martha. Well, taking that one out, I'll have about three or four gowns for Martha. And then that's what you kind of do. You kind of say, when I'm wearing this gown, I'm this person, and, you know.
And usually it works, but sometimes it doesn't, you know. I mean, sometimes you come in the morning, and all of a sudden you were expecting to be one character, and you're somebody else. So you work with what you've got, you know.
And then way back in the closet, I still have the stuff. I used to play midwife as well. And every once in a while, when we have an obstetrician's or something, gynecology people in, then I'll pull out the midwife because none of the other ladies have picked up a midwife yet.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much, folks, very much for letting me interview you.
It's my pleasure.
This is really cool.
Wow, huh? It's interesting to find out not only coming up to the characters, but speaking with the actual actors who portray the characters.
And you know, they study and research a great deal. Colonial Williamsburg, of course, has a fantastic research library, but they study throughout their roles all the time to try to, you know, because more things about history come to light, especially about women's history, and I think that's really exciting. History, you know, things change as people progress, but the hopes and the feelings and, you know, the aspirations of women as well as men, you know, everybody has, you know, what they want to do with their lives and what they hope for their children. And, you know, so there are certain constants in the universe that stay the same. It's really an interesting way to connect with people and with your past and with the past that we all share.
Yeah.
So it's one of the fun things about coming here. I mean, you know, you can, you know, there's something for everybody. There's history. There's great art museums. There's terrific theme parks if you're into nature. Virginia is quite beautiful. We'll be driving down the Colonial Parkway tomorrow and along the York River, and it's really a spectacular view. And you know, you think about the fact that, you know, you're driving along a road where, you know, 400 years ago, you know, the Virginia Indians and the English settlers, you know, trod. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you take another turn and you're in Busch Gardens or Water Country USA, a great water park. And so it's really a lot of fun and a lot of variety of things to do and see.
Yeah, and you could definitely spend a lot of time. Who's that? Wait.
No, that's one of the chickens that you saw out at Jamestown Settlement today and scared with Eunice.
That's why, yeah, isn't it? Well, what can you do?
One thing I'd like to tell everybody who's listening is that, you know, everybody uses the internet today to, you know, to find out more about, you know, where they want to travel and what there is to do. And we have a great website, WilliamsburgCC.com/tourism, that is a great, you know, one source of, you know, you can find out what attractions are here, what hotels are here, where you know, great places to go. If you want to go biking, you know, great places to eat. We went to a couple of restaurants so far while you've been here, and, you know, places like Hogwild Smokehouse, which has both great, you know, barbecue, but also fantastic Creole and Cajun food, because Billy Lee Watkins, the chef, moved up here from Louisiana, so he brought a lot of great recipes with him. And we were at the Blue Talon the other night. I seem to remember a chocolate dessert there that you liked.
Oh, my God.
Chef Everett, you know, has taken a lot of southern foods, but also a lot of comfort foods, and given them a continental and haute cuisine twist. But, yes, you had a... I mean, you look pretty blissful while you're eating that chocolate noisette.
Eventually, I'll have all these photos up on my blog and up on American Chronicle for people to see of, like, what I ate and, you know, of course, the people that I met and et cetera. Oh, yeah, this was, yes, that was one way to celebrate my birthday yesterday, huh? I couldn't have had a better piece of chocolate cake. But in the meantime, what was the name of the place with the costumes? Exactly what it's called?
Oh, it's Colonial Williamsburg's Costume Design Center, and it just recently celebrated its 75th birthday. And, again, they do a lot of research into the period clothing of all, you know, not just, you know, the Martha Washingtons and Patrick Henrys of the world, but also their servants, their slaves, the tradespeople you see on the street, you know, the people that run the post office, the print shop, the local silversmith, the people who take care of the beautiful horses and carriages. And so there's like hundreds of positions that they create costumes for. And you found out a little bit about that too.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I interviewed Brenda Rousseau.
Yes.
Before I tell you about my getting into a costume, let's hear that interview, and then we'll... okay.
Well, let's begin by introducing yourself to my audience.
Okay. My name is Brenda Rousseau, and I'm manager of the Costume Design Center at Colonial Williamsburg.
Now, what exactly is it?
The Costume Design Center outfits the 750 costumed interpreter and the interpreters in the historic area of Colonial Williamsburg in 18th century appropriate attire.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been here 14 years.
14 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is your background in costuming for
theater? My background
theater?
Is in theatrical costuming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you decided just to focus on this particular era?
Well, I had worked for Jamestown, which is a 17th century site, and which is a 17th century site that's kind of, the site itself is lovely, but the clothing you built is not. It's primarily for men who came here, and it was a sort of Jamestown, sort of a boomtown mentality, where they came to make money and then they left. And so, the clothing, though it's interesting, it's not that attractive, and there's not that much of it to study. The 18th century, on the other hand, lots of stuff that survives that you can study, and it's a little bit prettier.
So when somebody comes here and they say, hey, I think I'd like to, you know, I just got a job here.
Mm-hmm.
You gave me a job here, you know, I need the clothing. What do? How do you start it?
Well, every job specific to Colonial Williamsburg in the historic area has an allotment. We have site interpreters, orientation interpreters, group interpreters. And what we do is there's an allotment that's specific to that particular job, so they can do their job. And that includes the 45 to 50 articles of clothing that are necessary for them to work for about a week to a week and a half without changing or washing their clothing.
Oh, okay. So they don't have to say, oh, I just took this off, I'm sweating, here it is, go clean it for me so I could use it tomorrow.
Right, exactly. They get, for instance, tradesmen get 10 shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's enough to do 2 weeks' worth of work without changing a shirt, without having to have your stuff laundered.
Okay. So they're getting a lot, you said
45 to 50 articles of clothing.
Mm-hmm. Does that include, when you say articles, that's just the clothing, not the accessories?
No, that's the accessories as well.
They
get two pairs
well.
Of shoes, six pairs of stockings, neckwear, kerchiefs, cravats if you're a gentleman, two hats if you're a gentleman. Then for women, you get all your undergarments, which would be shifts. You get a pair of stays, you get the hoops, side hoops to give you the correct silhouette, you get caps, you get kerchiefs, you get several petticoats, which are the outerwear, you get gowns, jackets, everything that you need to do your job.
But you've got it, I suppose they got to wear their own bras and underwear, right?
We ask that they wear underwear, but the stays will, stays sort of negate the need for a bra.
Oh, because they're,
up,
the way
yeah.
they're
you don't need a bra.
Set
you
up.
Wear stays. Yeah.
Oh, that's one less piece.
One less article of clothing.
Yeah.
So if you're a female, the only personal article that you're going to be wearing is panties.
Okay.
Hopefully.
So now, how is like, what's the process like of trying to do these things to get this these costumes together? Where do you get the material from?
The materials we get from a number of sources. We try to stick to natural fibers, linen, cotton, wool, and silk, but we order them from a number of different vendors. We order from New York. We order from England. There are a number of places that we do order from. Then the most difficult part of the process is probably developing the specific garment from an antique. And as we discussed it before during the tour, ideally you'd like to have an antique, a person, a depiction of the person who owned the original antique in that garment, and then some sort of documentation that says, on this day, at this time, I wore this garment to this event, and it was made for me by so-and-so, and I paid this much for it. But that never actually happens.
So you have to draw from pictures or whatever.
Right,
yeah,
from both. I mean, from documentary sources, which would be letters, diaries, runaway ads, from portraiture, from period graphics, prints, drawings and those sorts of things.
Now, we've gone into rooms like where we've seen, like, for instance, that room with all the clothing that looks like that when you go into a cleaner's and the thing
right,
goes
the room,
through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, those items are not specific to any one who's getting it. In other words, let's say you make a coat and then you make it in different sizes. Is that what you do?
No, when we build, we generally build for a specific person. If we're going to build a coat, we're going to build it for a specific person with a specific job or who plays a specific character, like in Revolutionary City. We do have some stock items that are built, but the way we operate has changed pretty drastically within the last 3 or 4 years because of the economy. We don't hire as many people in the summer, so we don't need as much stock on hand to address them.
But then there's times, I guess, like with the last item you showed me. Now, what was that, the one they addressed?
The Lady Dunmore, for the arrival of Lady Dunmore.
Yeah, so that was something like, you don't do that like every year or every week or every whatever. That's something like that came up, and now you have to make the costume for it? Is that
we generally have a project. For instance, that is probably the second time this year. The first time that this year has happened, but we have this 17th century project that we have to build for. So it happens 2 to 3 times a year. It just sort of depends upon.
Do you have any favorite costumes?
Yeah, I really like the Lady Dunmore gown because it's new.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the court suit. That was probably the best project I ever worked on, the yellow court suit. And I'm very fond. I love military uniforms because they're very specific, and you get a lot of bang for your buck. You get a lot of flash for a relatively small expenditure. And I really like livery. Do you know the attire of servants, formal attire of servants,
mm-hmm.
for footmen and. Because it's just so different. I mean, now the only liveried people you see are people at hotels. But,
right. If you had a choice, let's say, regardless of male or female outfit to wear.
To wear?
Yeah, to wear. What would you, is there anyone?
We dress so differently now. Our clothing in the 18th century is relatively close fitting and close to the body. I don't think that I would like any of it.
Oh, I don't mean to wear, to walk around in.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, I must try this on. I
mm-hmm.
would, you know, just to see how I look in this. Is there something?
Well, I really think generally men's attire from the 18th century is very well made, for the most part.
Yes.
And this is true throughout history. Men's attire generally is less expensive and better made. In the 18th century, women's attire is very, very expensive because it requires a lot of fiber, a lot of fabric.
Right.
And it's cobbed together in such a way that it can be taken apart and reused and remade. So consequently, you look on the inside and it's not that attractive. It's, but men's clothing, for the most part, the craftsmanship and tailoring in it is really pretty, pretty awesome.
So when I later do walk around Colonial Williamsburg,
uh-huh.
and I see all these people in their outfits and costumes, I'll know
mm-hmm.
that it all came from here. That's the beginning.
Pretty much. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like when doing this? I mean, have you seen any like celebrities come into the area and or somebody who had to portray somebody or because they were filming or something? Has any of that ever happened?
We the John Adams miniseries filmed here
mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago. We didn't have a whole lot to do with that. The Costume Design Center didn't. I mean, we gave them a tour, the designer a tour of the facility, but we're really not set up to do a large production like that.
Yeah. So they had to get their own costumes.
They had to get their own, but we did give them a tour and share our sources with them, how we, where we find fabrics and that sort of thing. But all of that was built in New York. We recently had a guest artist, Mamie Gummer, play Lady Dunmore, and that was pretty popular. She's a stage actress, an actress of stage on screen. She was in Evening, and I can't remember what else she was in. But I know, oh, she was in The Devil Wears Prada, but her better scene was cut out.
Oh,
yeah. She's in the outtakes. You can see that.
And she's who? She's.
She's Meryl Streep's daughter.
Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I just got a flashback with saying that. I remember I was doing years ago. I did movies, and I was an extra in the movie. Meryl Streep was standing like right next to me, and I remember thinking to myself, "All right, they said, don't talk to these stars. Don't talk to the stars." And it was like, I'm just dying to say hello or say. And the first thing I looked at her, I said, "God, her skin is so soft in me," whatever kind of thing. No, don't even say one word to Meryl. Don't say anything. So I gather you must enjoy. Do you prefer doing this to like going to one show to another to do theatrical?
Yeah, I love this work. I do. It allows you to concentrate in a specific period and sort of do directed research and look at antiques and.
Great.
It's great work.
Well, hopefully there'll be more.
Yeah.
You to do.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your visit.
I will.
You know, Linda, it's interesting. You know, as a journalist, to be able to do something like this. This is not anything open to the public, right? The public can't get this kind of tour, can they?
Well, actually, on Thursdays, a tour of the Costume Design Center is available. It's it comes with the admission to Colonial Williamsburg. You do have to sign up for it, though, make reservations for that particular tour, because they can't take hundreds of people.
Sure.
You know, they want to keep it on the smaller side. But it's, you know, 20, 30 people. So, yes, you can. It's a great behind-the-scenes tour, and you really do get the sense of how much, you know, how much research, but also how much craftsmanship goes into what happens every day at Colonial Williamsburg, and so it is a lot of fun. And I think you found that out when they fitted you for an outfit, and
fitting me for an outfit is like, you know, putting me in drag, I gotta tell you.
Well, it is a different way to dress, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think every woman in the country would be very happy with the comparison of with all we have to go through to get dressed, that it isn't with stays that have whalebone in them and petticoats that you have to tie.
Just by the way, just so people understand what a stay is.
Well,
it's sort of like a sort of corset to around your bust area.
Well, from
it
your waist.
It flattens your tits, in other words.
Well, it extends from your a little bit below your waist all the way up to under your arms. And unlike corsets, which were in a later period, which gave you an hourglass figure, stays were a little bit more comfortable and gave you more of a, you know, a cone-shaped figure. So you still had a bit of a waist, but you weren't being laced into something that gave you a 16-inch waist like happened later on. So at least you could breathe. We let you breathe.
That's true. That's true. And again, once once I get things up on my blog and everything, you'll be able to see just what I look like.
I thought you looked kind of cute.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I lost 3 inches with my stay. Mm-hmm.
And you could still breathe, so hey, it's not a
big
deal.
Mm-hmm. Not for long, but I was able to do that. But that was pretty cool. This is really a lot. I mean, you really have to spend a lot of time there just to get a sense. But the nice thing about it is that when you say living history, I mean, you can. I'll tell you, it's much better than trying to read something in a book.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, I've seen You know, speaking of costumes, you know, a lot of when families come to Colonial Williamsburg, you can rent costumes, and a lot of the both boys and girls will rent Colonial costumes and wear them while they're here, and they'll play the Colonial games, and they really get into it. You know, they really get a sense of what life was like, and you know, they give up the iPods for the, you know, for a couple of hours, and they really really sort of enjoy how life was in the past, and it's an experience that they don't get very often, so they really do have a lot of fun doing it. They run up and down Duke of Gloucester Street. They outside the courthouse, they get into the stocks and things like that. And, you know, they even in the trade shops can participate in some of the programs of, you know, apprentice programs and things like that. So
yeah. Well, the first thing, actually, I think we did was the tour of the Capitol.
Mm-hmm. And the Governor's Palace, too.
Oh, the Governor's Palace,
yes.
Right.
Yes. And you found out about Lord and Lady Dunmore. Lady Dunmore was actually an 18th century celebrity. When she arrived, it was much ballyhooed on both sides of the Atlantic that she and her children were coming. Of course, when she arrived, I don't think she realized that she was going to be the wife of the last royal governor and was going to be leaving Williamsburg in the middle of the night when the revolution, after the Battle of Lexington and Concord, things were starting to get a little testy, and Lord Dunmore didn't feel it was safe for the family to stay any longer, so they sort of left in the middle of the night. She went back to England with the children.
Well, the second part of the triangle, as we call it, was Jamestown, which is what we did today.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to, the Jamestown Settlement? Is that the?
Yes, Jamestown.
The whole caboodle, the building and it all.
Jamestown Settlement is another living history museum. It's just, you know, 9 miles down the road from Colonial Williamsburg, and that was where the first permanent English settlement was established in 1607, right next door at historic Jamestown Island, which is also open to the public. It is run by the National Park Service and Preservation Virginia, but it is still doing archaeology. Jamestown Settlement, which is literally right across, a small body of water, is where they interpret everything, and talks about and shows both through indoor exhibits, but also outdoor living history exhibits, how the Indians lived, how they interacted with England.
I actually happened to
you
have another interview.
Yes, you spoke
with
one of the
Nancy
historians.
Nancy Egloff?
Yes.
Who's an historian, and I'm going to have her tell us about what's over there.
First of all, I'd like you to introduce yourself to my audience.
Okay, I'm Nancy Egloff. I'm one of the historians with the Jamestown-Yorktown Foundation. I'm the historian here at Jamestown Settlement.
Great. And so what exactly is the Jamestown Settlement?
Jamestown Settlement is a museum that interprets 17th century history, of the founding of Jamestown, America's first permanent English settlement. But we also depict the lives of the native peoples who were in Virginia prior to the founding of Jamestown, and the lives of the African peoples who were brought here as servants and then entered into slavery. So we talk about three different groups of people, the early English, the Powhatan Indians, and early Africans in Virginia.
So now when you come here, what's here to look at?
Well, we have an indoor, large indoor gallery, 30,000 square feet of museum space. A smaller changing gallery, which now currently houses the exhibit Werowocomoco, Seat of Power, which talks about the first capital of the Powhatan Indians under Wahunsonacock or Powhatan. And then our outdoor living history areas are filled with costumed interpreters that interact with the public and teach them the history of the Indians. We have recreated three recreated ships, first ships, James Fort, and a riverfront discovery area.
And at what's at the riverfront discovery area?
In the riverfront discovery area, we're not limited so much to time as we are in the other three areas. We cover the 17th century, and we talk about the interactions between the English, the Powhatan Indians, and the Africans, and compare how each of them would have worked in a kind of a riverfront setting, featuring things like map making, canoe building, and so forth.
Now, Nancy, is there anything like that interesting you learned? How long have you been here, by the way?
I've been here 25 years.
25 years.
I get an award this evening.
Oh, she's getting an award this evening. Oh, that's great. You get a watch. That's what everybody seems to get for 25 years or something. Is there anything like that you really learned about this place because of being here so much?
Oh my gosh, I've learned everything.
I mean, anything that's been like, wow, I didn't really, wow, I had no idea.
Well, when I was trained in college and graduate school, there's so many things about early Virginia history that were not known. And that was back in the 70s and 80s. Since then, we've learned so much, particularly through archaeology. There was a flurry of archaeology done in the 1980s and 90s in the Commonwealth, both on native sites and on historic sites. So, and the other big area that is, in which we've increased our knowledge has to do with the African peoples who came here. Can I keep going with that?
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
We there are people around here. We didn't get this privately.
recently, in the last 10, 15 years, people with whom we've consulted have been looking at documents having to do with the early Africans, and they've learned a lot more about the peoples, where they came from on the west coast of Africa, and what their lifestyles were like. So we've really been able to increase our knowledge of the early Africans in Virginia.
What would you say if of the, let's say, the three main sites here, you say the three main sites here to see at this place? I mean, like,
in the astrology?
Yeah, I mean, like, in other words, you must come into the building, there's the ship, and then...
The Powhatan Village, the three ships, James Fort.
If you had a choice of one, would you say, and don't miss the...
Oh, my, I don't know. Everybody seems to want to see the ships, but in order to see the ships, you have to walk all the way down past the village and through the fort.
Oh, okay. So you don't really have a choice.
If you're limited with time, walking through the areas is a good thing. If visitors don't have time to walk all the way through our 30,000 square feet of gallery space, we have a great hall with a timeline. It's kind of a fast track that people can walk down through past the timeline and learn pretty quickly about what's happening in Virginia in the 17th century, decade by decade.
Do you think most people don't know really a lot about this whole thing? In terms of like, I had no, I'll tell you, I didn't even know. I mean,
people are vaguely aware of Jamestown, but I think, you know, it's just maybe in the last 10 years or so that we've tried so hard to emphasize Jamestown as being earlier than Plymouth. I mean, we talked about this for years, but the history books always emphasized Plymouth as the early English settlement. So kids were growing up learning about Plymouth and the life of the Pilgrims and the stories about the Pilgrims, and not as much about Jamestown. And I think the story's finally getting into their textbooks about Jamestown being the first. 12 years before Plymouth was begun, Jamestown was here.
So you said it was 12 years before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you realize, by the way, as a historian, as a historian, you realize that the Mayflower didn't even land at Plymouth Rock. That wasn't the first place that they landed at, which was also doesn't get into the history books. No one says Provincetown, and, you know, like, what? What are you talking about? Plymouth Rock, you know.
Correct, correct.
Yeah, so we seem to eliminate a lot of things from the history books, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I
my 25 years.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what discoveries and finding new ways. We found new ways to teach
mm-hmm.
the history over the years through our exhibits and interpretive areas outside.
Okay. Well, I hope your reward is good tonight for being here for 25 years. And it better be more than just a watch. Well, thank you very much, Nancy. I'll let you know if I have any other questions for you.
Okay.
Very good.
You know, it'll be interesting getting this information from her about Thanksgiving. She said she wrote something.
Yes.
She wrote a whole thing on Thanksgiving on,
mm-hmm.
you know, what it really was or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But that was in case anybody was wrong. It did start out as quiet.
Yes.
I mean, we got a spot and it was a quiet spot and. You know, we're in public. People are coming up there.
Yep, people are coming up to see the new exhibit on Wera Rokomoko, which was where Powhatan, Pocahontas' father, that was his seat of power, about 20 miles from Jamestown. So there's a special exhibition going on up there. So, yeah. And then you went outside and you saw...
Well, I also wanted to comment that in terms of, like, it's not, the museum is really worth spending a good deal of time
mm-hmm.
and seeing. There's a lot of, there's, like, little movies and things like that. It's a little interactive. But it's I wouldn't say, like, breeze through it. I mean, it's really, and there was this... movie. It was interesting. It was movie, and it started depicting a whole bunch of artifacts.
Yeah.
The artifacts were right there, and then as they would talk about the artifact, a light would go on the artifact itself, so you can look at it, the artifact, and you know, get some information about it. And I thought that was a pretty good idea.
Oh, it's a great idea because artifacts, you know, are wonderful, but if you don't know, you know, like a piece of jewelry or, you know, a scepter, but if you don't know how they were used and what they meant to the culture of the time, it's not as interesting. So, yeah, it's that particular one was about African artifacts and you know, where the first Africans who were brought to America came from. So it was really pretty fascinating because they had a very thriving culture of their own. You know, they just didn't appear here, and you know, so not a lot of people know about that. So it was it's a great way to learn about other cultures that contributed to our culture and are still part of our culture.
Yeah.
In America.
By the way, just personally, with the all of the areas to go to, I didn't think the ships were as big a deal as the other places.
Well, that's because you're not a kid.
Yes,
yes. There is no more popular place in Jamestown settlement than the recreations of the three ships that brought the original settlers.
Yeah.
And when you look at, think about crossing the Atlantic in those small ships. It's kind of like, oh my God, boy, were those people a lot braver than I am.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm not saying it's not interesting, but I'm saying in terms of, as an adult, the other areas were a lot more interesting. I mean, I'll get into that in a little while because I have another interview, but I want to get into that's what I call, I guess, that second area, the living history area.
Yes.
And we did, it was kind of, first it was one part of the area, which was like near the ships. There was like the canoe. I mean, there were certain things. There was some farming. What else was there before we went into the that whole whatever area?
Well, there's also a recreation of an Indian village, and you get to see how.
Oh, right, right, yes,
know,
yes.
Pocahontas and her people lived during that time, and they had a very thriving culture of their own. And then there was also what we call the Riverfront Discovery Area, and you learn about trade, but you also learn about how the Indians built a canoe, which was, you know, they felled trees, and then they would use, burning embers to start to burn a hole in the middle of the tree trunk, and then they'd scrape them out. And you know, within days, depending on how many people you had working on it and scraping and burning, you had a great canoe that lasted for years and years.
Yeah, we're scraping it out with oyster shells.
Yes, oyster shells are very sturdy implements for scraping. They used them also on deer hides to scrape and make clothes. The Indians, one of the things that the English and the Indians traded was cotton cloth, because deer hides are really fine in the wintertime, but they're a little bit on the warm side in the summertime. So the Indians learned to appreciate certain aspects of cotton clothing. It was a lot cooler in Virginia summers.
And we also learned about the muskets, and we had a couple of muskets firing there, too.
Yep, and one of the popular things inside the recreated fort too is trying on armor. The Englishmen in the early years wore armor, and kids love to try on the armor, even in hot weather. They really love putting on the helmets and the breastplates and then going to watch the musket firings and talking with the costumed interpreters who are inside the fort, including the blacksmith who makes all the nails and hinges that are still used in, you know, when they build the buildings inside the fort.
Well, one of the amusing things that happened, they had caught some chickens around.
Yes.
There were some chickens around. And I decided, this chicken was like, you could go up to the chicken, and the chicken didn't really care, and, whatever. Then all of a sudden, I decided to introduce Essa, my rubber chicken, to the chicken. And she kind of, I have a fault. She kind of looked at her. They looked at each other. And then right after that, that chicken started quacking and didn't want to stop. As
yes,
if she was warning the other chickens that there's a dead chicken around, and this is what we're going to look like.
Yeah, I think you definitely started the chicken rebellion there for a little while.
That's where I think maybe that's where the phrase henpecked might have come from. Oh, yeah. That was pretty cool. Again, the difference, just so people can get it, the difference in, like, going to Colonial Williamsburg, and this is, although it's living history, these people are not in character. I mean, the dressing, but you're not going to find anybody, really, that's like, when you talk to them, as opposed to if you were talking to Martha Washington, she stays in character as Martha Washington. But here they're just, they are costumed, but they're not, as if they don't know that there's a computer around. So you're being, that kind of a thing.
Right.
So, one of the last things I have, one more interview that I did to talk about, in terms of the ship. And this was an interview with Chris, who was a historian, and she was on the ship called the Susan Constant. Is that what it was called?
Yes, so the Susan Constant
was
the largest.
So this is the last interview, but not the end of the show. This is the last interview, and this is with Chris.
Okay, hi. Well, tell us who you are. I just got on the ship here. I'm not sure where I am, but who are you?
Well, my name is Kristen. I'm a historic interpreter on our reproduction vessels here. So you have stepped aboard the Susan Constant, which was the flagship of the founding fleet of Virginia. So three ships left England in December of 1606, and they made their way here in May, and they left 104 men and boys to found Jamestown, the first permanent English settlement in the New World.
So what exactly, like, on this, I see there's some more ships. What can you see on this particular ship?
This is an incredible reproduction. It was finished in 1991. You can access all of the crew's quarters. They live in cabins off of the main deck, so you can see a cabin where the cook lived and his cooking facilities. You can see where the bosun and his mates lived. He's in charge of all the sails and the rigging. You can lay right in the captain's bunk, the officer's bunks. You can steer the ship inside the officer's quarters with a really unusual piece of equipment called a whipstaff.
If I steer the ship, will it go anywhere?
No, you'll just be moving the rudder in the water. We're moored very well.
Oh, that's good to know. I get seasick a lot, so I was just kind of wondering. And what else? Anything else?
Yes, you can also go down below decks and see where cargo was kept. And, of course, the most interesting cargo on a colonization voyage is colonists.
Are they down there, too?
You can play that role when you're down there.
Oh, I see. Now, you said this is the largest of the ships?
This is. In 17th century language, they would say this is a 120-ton vessel, which is how much she can carry. She's the largest. We also have a 40-ton and a 20-ton vessel.
And are they any different to look at?
They are different. The 120-ton vessel Susan Constant and the Godspeed, the 40-ton vessel, are the same type of ship, but just by virtue of there being very different sizes and being two different ships, it's worth going aboard all of them.
Now, what is, like, do you know anything about, like, the history of this ship or any of the other ships? Like,
we know a little bit. Records from this time period are scanty. The Susan Constant broke her mooring lines and banged into another ship on the Thames in 1605, the year she was built back in England. So there's a...
I don't remember that year. I can't... No, okay.
The accident might have been in 1606, actually, now that I think about it. I'll have to look that back up. But there's a court record that tells us a little bit then about her size, the owners of the ship. So we know a little bit about her. We know the Godspeed was owned by the Muscovy Company, which is a Baltic trading company. So we know a little bit. The discovery we know less about. She was left with the colonists, so they'd have a vessel to explore with.
Now, is this not the actual ship, is it?
No, nothing remains of any of the original ships.
Oh, so you have to kind of go into the history and figure out what it looked like and do some replication of this, huh? Who actually did this to replicate the ship, do you know?
A team of people, including some members of our own staff and then also outside naval architects and historians. It took many years and a lot of research to create a vessel like this. But absolutely historians, naval architects worked on the plans.
I see. It's like the kids run over here the quickest, don't they?
They do, and they love to pretend it's a pirate ship. We try to teach them about honest sailors as well.
Oh, you want to make sure they know that there's not just everybody's, you know, getting, walking the plank, huh?
That's right. Not everybody's out to plunder and steal.
How long have you been working here?
10 years.
10 years, huh? Now, working here 10 years, did you, like, learn a lot because, you know, I didn't know that. Did you keep learning?
Oh, absolutely. You never stop learning. I'm still learning. It's the subject of Jamestown. You can study from so many different angles that we've got folks who've worked here over 20 years, and they still learn new things, too. That's the fun part.
Is your main thing to be at the ship, or do you do other stuff on the, in this, yeah, in Jamestown?
Well, this is my main thing, although I've worked in other parts of the museum. In fact, I've just come back from spending a few years in another part of the museum, so I'm also refreshing my own memory. It's like learning a whole other language, all the nautical lingo.
Oh, that's pretty good. So you can you nautical to people? Can you, like, so you know which is the, what's the bow, the stern, the...
What are the things, the bow? The bow to start.
Absolutely. Well, just, you know, one of the most common questions we get asked is, what is this little knight's head over here? We've got this carved figure with all the pulleys. Well, that's for the halyard. The halyard is the line that raises and lowers the spar that the sail hangs from. And that spar is called the yard, so halyard comes from haul, yard.
Oh, hi, I like that. Any other, like, odd things? Anything, other things on here that, like, that people point to and say, hey, lady, what's that?
Well, that's a great question. If you look up, you'll see what are called round tops, and people often think those are crow's nests. But you'll notice there's a sail that gets set above those round tops. And when that sail is set, you can't see from there. You can't see anything forward of it. So that's how you know it's a round top, not a crow's nest. Plus, we're not a whaling vessel, so we don't need a crow's nest.
Oh, is there anything up there that... that's why no one has to say, hey, we're about to hit a... whatever.
Well, you do post someone as a bow watch, but they don't have to be up that high.
Oh, so that's what they were, bow watches.
Uh-huh. You can sit right up there on the foredeck and see the bow watch.
Oh, and have you done that?
I have.
And have you have to watch the people coming on the ship? Is that what you needed to do?
We do. We certainly like to give everybody lots of attention when they come to visit us and make sure everybody's safe. Because it's a real ship and you could really fall in the water. So we won't let that happen to you today.
Okay, that's good because I don't know how to swim. Well, I
got life.
Oh, that's good. Well, I thank you very much for telling us about this. May I go check out all the other ships? Is there one of you on each ship?
I'm not sure how to answer that question. There are other historians on other ships.
That's what my question was. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, well, unless we started cloning, you know. That's what I kind of meant. But thank you very much for sharing that.
Well, it was a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was, you know, that's just what it's great for, you're right, for kids. Because I think because kids have such an imagination, you know, as opposed to going to the other places where they're kind of, I don't want to say they're thrown information, going on these ships is like they can, you know, have stuff in their head. Of course, they probably seen enough Pirates of Caribbean and whatever, you know, to help, right?
True. But one of the things they learn when they're on the ships, at Jamestown Settlement, a lot of school groups come in, and they're so they learn about what navigation was like back then, and, you know, how you had to navigate by the stars. And in the Indian village, as I said, they learn about, you know, what life was like among the Virginia Indians of the time period. So, you know, it's connecting with the past in a much more fun way. There's just, you know, a lot of, there's something for every age when you go to these living history museums.
You know, one of the things that I thought was so cute in one of the homes, the Indian homes, it's done so well that a bird made its nest.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a basket. It was it looked like something that was made out of cloth, wasn't it?
I think you know that they do reproductions of baskets, and sometimes they are lined. And yeah, it's amazing that the mama bird got in there and decided that was a good place to raise her family.
And she kept on watching to see who's coming in or going near it.
Right.
I certainly didn't want to put extra clothes to which she was. Oh, I definitely wouldn't want to do that. That was pretty cool. Well, since we're going to go to Yorktown tomorrow, and I probably won't do a show until Thursday when I'm actually going to be in Virginia Beach, what would I expect in Yorktown that's, like, different in terms of, you know, like, the way it's presented versus Jamestown and Colonial Williamsburg?
Well, there will be certain similarities when you go to Yorktown Victory Center and also the Colonial Battlefield. Yorktown Victory Center is a museum of the American Revolution, and there was both indoor galleries that talk about, you know, that and show and depict how the nation got started from, you know, struggling from its colonial period through the revolution and becoming an actual nation. The outdoor living history areas are of a Continental Army encampment and a 1780s farm. So you really get to see how the soldiers lived and also how people on a typical farm lived, because it's what they call a middling farm. You know, it's not a plantation, but it's a middle class family, a farming family. And of course, on the Colonial Battlefield, you see where General Washington and our French allies won the decisive battle. But you're also going to go to historic Yorktown itself, and it's right on the York River, and it has a beautiful waterfront area called Riverwalk Landing, and then there's the old historic town itself, which includes a number of buildings, but also artist shops and things like that. And we're going to take a Segway tour, which I know you're looking forward. You've actually done one before. I've never been on one of those wheeled vehicles, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But Yorktown gives you also the feeling, in addition to, you know, to a little bit, a lot of colonial history, but it also gives you the feeling of what life is like on the Chesapeake Bay. It's it's got a very rich history rich maritime history and great seafood. So you're going to have great crab cakes tomorrow.
Oh, that too. So now, when you're doing these three places, are you basically in the same time period of all three?
Well, actually, you're going from 1607 and through the 1600s, with the founding of Jamestown and the beginnings of representative government, as well as cultural diversity and entrepreneurship. Then you go to Williamsburg, where democracy flowered and the ideas of liberty and independence and revolution. And then you go 20 minutes away and you're in Yorktown, which was where our independence was secured with the decisive battle of the revolution. So you're really covering, in that era, more than 200 years of history. And then, but we also have Civil War history in the area, and the 150th anniversary of the Civil War is coming up. So there are, interpretive sites on that as well. So history just keeps on going into present day. So we like to talk about, like at Busch Gardens, that it's where old world charm of Europe and colonial America meets 21st century technology, with all the physics and engineering of the great coasters and rides, as well as the entertainment. So you go back and forth into history and present day in a sort of seamless, fun way. We also have great golf courses. We have great spas. So, and as I said, there's a lot of arts. And, in the summertime, we have a lot of free concerts on the riverfront in Yorktown, in Merchant Square, in Williamsburg. So there's always something to do. And we have a website called www.williamsburgweekends.com, where you can go and find out what's coming up for the month, and even sign up for a newsletter so that you can find out. So you can really, if you're planning your vacation, you know what's coming up, and, oh, well, maybe I'll go then because such and such concert is happening. So there's lots to do.
So the question is then, if you have all this historic part of Yorktown, and then you have the modern part of Yorktown, would you call the modern part the New Yorktown?
you know that you can take the girl out of New York, but you can never take New York out of the girl. Let me tell you something though. Sometimes when you're on the York River, you're sailing or you're kayaking past, you know, the battlefield, and then all of a sudden you're passing a Navy ship that's coming up the York to or back and forth between the naval yards. So, you know, you're never far away from any time period when you're here.
that's true. And by the way, my coming here, we chose AirTran for me to get here, didn't we?
Yes, it's AirTran goes from Boston and New York down to here nonstop, and then also down to Atlanta, and has great connections. But Newport News Williamsburg International Airport is only 20 minutes away. We also are served by the Norfolk International Airport and Richmond Airport. So you have three airports, and we also have Amtrak that comes in. And, of course, driving here is pretty easy as well. And once you get here, if you don't feel like driving, we have in the summer, from March through October, the Historic Triangle Shuttle bus will take you between Colonial Williamsburg and Jamestown and Colonial Williamsburg and Yorktown free of charge, and then you can link up with other buses and trolleys while you're there. So if you don't like to drive, once you get here, you know, your life is pretty easy.
So, you know, so I guess you can do it from Amtrak, I know that AirTran is pretty good with prices. If you hit them at the right time, they're great with prices, and it could be even less, let's say, going from New York to down here than less on AirTran than on Amtrak.
Sometimes. But, that's one of the great things about the Internet. You can look for different prices, and you can look for different hotels and vacation rentals. The Internet is a great way to find out a lot of information and book your flights and everything else. So we're very centrally located, so it's easy to get to us and even easier to enjoy yourself once you're here.
Yeah, that's for sure. And tomorrow will be great. None of us have, except for myself. Well, I'll watch the three of you going on a Segway tour for the first time. Of course, I have my thank God I got my tech. I get my crew with me, since I had so much trouble with this between. By the way, I know people don't not seeing this, but I had to go from use my computer. Thank God we got two computers here. I got my computer. Right now, I'm not even. Am I on mine? No. No, I'm not on mine. I'm actually on Barbara's computer because I don't know what was going on, and we were going from Wi-Fi, but now we're on a different connection. I mean, this was crazy. But and of course, Nancy did such a great job. You can't see the photos. Actually, if you go on to this particular show, you can see a couple of collages of photos. Once I get back to New York, I can blog everything, and you'll, be able to see see the rest of the photos and some YouTube stuff, some of which is quite humorous, very humorous.
Yeah, especially if you in colonial costume.
Yeah. We were... We had, actually, we had seen some photos, like part of it is I have YouTube, and then part of it stages of what I look like. Yeah, mm-hmm. Couldn't wait to get it off of me.
Of course, we also relaxed with a little, a microbrewery tour and tasting.
Oh, the microbrewery
well.
Tour. Yes.
Yeah, Williamsburg Ale Works. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was kind of cool, too. But
well,
I...
Yeah.
And the English always brought their, started, to make beer once they arrived. So that kind of tradition continues today.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to plug, by the way, is the umbrella that I had. It's called Gustbuster, is the name of the company. And they have several umbrellas. They have one which I think people probably have seen on golf courses and for when it rains, particularly for when it rains. It's a very large umbrella. And the thing with Gustbuster is that it can withstand up to 55-mile-an-hour winds because of the way it's built. But the one that I brought down with me, I don't know how I got it through security. I mean, well, I'll explain what it is. But this particular one is set up just for the sun and, take some of the UV rays out. And when you have it up, it feels like 10 degrees cooler. Now, the way it is also on one end, you can, stick it into the ground, and on the other end, you can open it up and have a seat. But I guess the sticking into the ground, I had explained to the security when I went on the plane, this is an umbrella, what it was about. I didn't realize what the bottom looked like. But and they also make a traveling one, a much smaller one, again, for the rain, and it was, there were some times I needed it as a walking stick. It's also a walking stick.
We didn't let you use it as a seat much because you were on the run. You were pretty busy.
Yeah, as a seat, because I finally wanted to see what it would be like. First of all, I'm too short for it to be as a seat. But you can, if you stick it into the ground, you can kind of lean on the seat. So you're getting some of the pressure, I guess, off your feet, but not to really just sit and dangle your feet kind of thing. Doesn't do that, no, not at all. But anyway, this has been really cool. What I'll probably do regarding tomorrow is, because when I get home, I'm going to want to do another radio show to deal with anything I didn't cover, so we'll probably get, I'll do some interviews maybe tomorrow and then, or have, the call-ins for next week for when I get home, because that's how I'll be able to cover Yorktown. I don't want to leave Yorktown out.
Nope, because you're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, and eating, too.
Oh, yes.
Which I've done too much of. Well,
hey,
I know.
What can you say? The place has a lot of great food.
Yeah, this is true. Well, Linda, I guess, I'll see you tomorrow, and thanks for coming on and chatting about this, and I'll make sure that, especially in the articles, to give the websites to go to, and I guess you can get it'll show you on your website, you'll be able to see, package deals, right?
Yes, we have some, and we also have links to a lot of hotels as well as attractions, like Colonial Williamsburg and our different museums, and shopping areas like Prime Outlets, so that you can see what's going on there as well.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, there's also non-colonial Williamsburg.
Yep, there's great shopping around here.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, so I guess we'll see you tomorrow, huh?
You got it.
And continue on this route. What time again?
9:15.
9:15, okay.
All righty.
Yes. Okay.
Good night.
Okay, good night. Thanks a lot.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, yeah, that was really cool. So what I'm going to do, I know I got 6 minutes to go, and that's okay. I'm going to end the show now, and tune in. I don't know what time yet, but it'll be this Thursday. And until then,